Welcome to the Magic and Mindfulness Podcast. You're joining me, Amy Maxwell, on my journey of understanding the world of light magic in order to cultivate mindful living. I'm so excited for you to join me on this path of discovery. Welcome back, everyone. Today, I'm speaking to Satu Tuomila, who is a yoga teacher trainer radicalizing the yoga scene right now. And through her 20 plus years of teaching and focus on somatic and embodiment work, she is guiding people back into themselves. So focusing less on what traditional yoga poses should look like, and instead diving into how it all feels. And some of you may have listened to my solo episode on my Kundalini awakening experience, which unfolded for me, or was unfolding for me, before my mind knew it was unfolding earlier this year. And this was during one of Satu's trainings. So if you haven't heard of what a Kundalini awakening is, maybe go back and listen to that episode first. Because in this episode and this chat, Satu shares her wisdom on somatic and embodied-based work through a yogic lens, but we also naturally progress into diving deeper into awakening and what this means, what it is, and why it might happen. And this part of the conversation was so organic and unplanned, but I love that we just went there and dived into a topic that is not so often discussed, because it can feel quite out there, because our minds cannot yet completely put words or logic to these felt experiences. But we try to just go there and really unpack some of the experiencing that goes into these awakening moments in our lives. And what I love about this chat is that we go all the way out there and discuss these spiritual awakenings through embodiment, which feels very on one end of the spectrum. But Satu also shares the realness of moving through life and changing moments when there is a realism of living as a mum, as she has and as she is, and someone who has an active function and role to show up every day to provide in society. Because these spiritual experiences or moments can get so lost if we don't ground them into reality. I also share quite openly about my own experiences, and Satu does too. So I hope even though these topics today are quite out there, you can still relate to elements in your own way. So this brings me on to our sponsors of today's episode. It makes so much sense as we speak about yoga today that Rose Tulips Tea are partnering with us to bring you this episode. Their Rose Tulips times Your Yoga Tea is a special edition tea for all the yogis out there. It's designed to invite more awareness into your daily routine and is the perfect addition to your yoga practice and mindful moments. Bask in the floral aroma of damask rose, infused with delicate notes of lemongrass, chamomile, ginger, and relaxing lavender. Best served warm, Rose Tulips times Your Yoga Tea is a naturally caffeine-free infusion that supports a balanced lifestyle. And for listeners, you get 20% off your purchase and a free sample with every order, so you can experience the different herbal flower combinations. You can find the link in the show notes and simply enter the code MAGICTEA for 20% off your order. We've linked the website and code in the show notes so that you can try it out for yourself. So thank you, Rose Tulips, for sponsoring this episode. It's a profound conversation with Satu Tuomila on awakening experiences through embodiment. I can't wait for you to hear it. So let's do it. Let's start the show. Hey, Satu, how are you today?
Well, thank you for asking. I'm pretty good. I have something going on in my system. Like, I feel like I'm fighting off something. But other than that, I'm really excited to be here.
I'm so happy you could join me. And yeah, I know you're not feeling super well, but yeah, even more appreciate you being here and taking the time today. So we're going to talk a lot in a lot of ways about different topics, but broadly underpinning somatic teaching and embodiment, because that's something you really focus on.
and teach to others. But before we dive in, I would just love to know a little bit more about you. And I know a little bit about Satu, but just about who you are, what you're doing now, and how you came on your path to yoga.
Well, that's a very, very long story. But I'll share some key points. What I do at the moment mostly is that I train teachers of yoga and dance and other type of kind of movement, even like fitness instructors. Was that my computer?
It was.
See how professional I am.
It's real life. It's okay.
It is. Let me just put it off though.
I always forget to do that.
Exactly. I'm sorry.
No worries.
I would say that I'm also going through some sort of process of like leaving some things in the past and some things in the future. So forgive me if I'm not super clear on this. But as far as what's going on now, I hold a lot of trainings on my own and with other teachers, also amazing teachers, because we believe so much about like bringing this yoga teaching and movement teaching back to its roots. So radicalizing yoga. That's a big word, but radical actually comes from a root word that means root, actually. So back to the roots. And I could go on forever about that. But yeah, I feel like we have mostly been robbed of the roots of yoga. Mm. All this more kind of patriarchal approach, more linear approach of yoga that we all have gone through, and it has served us well, but maybe not anymore. So I hold a lot of trainings. I teach some classes sometimes online, and I have a studio also here in southern Portugal that is kind of not like a studio that has a lot of classes, but it's just a studio that we can play in and offer whatever we want to offer in. So that's what I kind of do. But I'm also a mom. So I have three kids, two at home. The first one has already left. He's 20, almost 23, actually. So I became a mother very young.
I know. I don't know how to do it.
Part of it, the initiation, though, into this whole world. For me, at least,
Yeah, beautiful. Yeah, I remember. So me and Satu met in Sri Lanka for the first time, and I remember you telling us about your life, like your personal life, and also all the stuff that you do on, you know, just in your job. And it's a lot, isn't it, to balance? And
There's a whole lot more, of course, but just to kind of keep it in the intention of this podcast.
Nice.
everything though, so everything kind of connects in that way. But
yeah, beautiful. And you were talking a bit about sort of the roots of yoga, and I would love to dive in deeper into that, because probably for listeners, there might be people that are listening who are teachers, there might be people who are listening who just really enjoy yoga, there might be people that don't really vibe with yoga, and that's also okay. But yeah, just to get into the nitty-gritty of what it is you teach, because there's a lot of talk and chat online at the moment about somatics and embodiment. And I don't know if you've also noticed this trend, and everyone kind of probably has their own take on what it means. But having done one of your trainings and really resonated with how you teach embodiment, I would love to hear more around what the word somatic means in your terms and how it resonates for you.
Well, to get to somatics, we have to go through embodiment. Okay, so I'll talk to that. So embodiment is basically what we are all embodied. We have a body, right? But the way kind of we live our lives and what kind of the societal landscapes and everything that has been invented and how we are engaging with the outer world, that has actually gotten us a little bit away from the felt sense of that. Okay, so that's why we we can look at kids and see them so embodied because they're not, well, basically nowadays though, everybody has iPad or something. So it's kind of that's the thing that takes you away. And then you start to over-identify more with kind of the mind and the senses in a different way, if that makes sense. So embodiment would be a direct experience of what is arising through you as a living experience, right? So
yeah,
it can be emotions, feelings. It's basically, it's like embodiment brings you, it's a being process. So it brings you into being, right? So when we gain that back to us, which we were born with, right, that we're kind of robbed away from, when we gain that back, we're not doing things anymore from a perspective of kind of an outside information flow only. Mm-hmm. Like we should be doing this and we shouldn't be feeling this, or we should be saying that, we should drive for this, we should do life this way. Back into like the being of the body, which will tell us how we actually feel, how we are connected to this world, what we actually are. That's different than how we are, right? So, and also into this process of allowing everything to be just as they are without naming things as, oh, this feels bad, this feels good, which is fine. Like this is a kind of a, then it's an experience that we have on mind level more, right?
Yeah.
But underneath it, it's just this experience of being, right? Experience of being is embodiment.
Mm-hmm. Well, so you said at the beginning, somatics wouldn't be able to be described without embodiment.
Oh yeah, back to that. So somatics are kind of like all the tools and everything that we can. I always joke about this. It can be even golf. It can be. Everything can be done from a place of being first, and that will be kind of, then you would be doing things somatically. So soma means body. So body fully, not mindfully. See, like I know like mindfulness is part of embodiment process, but it's just a part of it. It's not the, like the, it's not the ending. So embodiment can be reached, or it's so funny to say reach because it's right here, but it can be realized and recognized through somatics.
Right, yeah.
You see, those are like the tools and the pathways, the school. There's a lot of different school of thoughts in somatics, you know, somatic experiencing, continuum. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of things, even mine, you know, authentic flow, it's somatics, right?
Right, so okay.
To get to that embodied living experience of yourself, you know, to be that aliveness that you are.
Yeah.
Without distractions and without also denial. So we're not in denial of what is relational.
Yeah.
It's like there's that continuum from the inner experience into the outer ocean of everything, right? And back. So it's also not just expansion, it's also, but this is very tantric now.
But
I always say like somatics and tantra, like the philosophy of somatics and embodiment is tantra. It's non-dual tantra for sure. Like 100%. Like it's really great to have those two together, because that will bring you into that union with the mind and body. It's not about getting out of the mind. It's about bringing the mind back into the body, because it always has been there. It never was away, but we just started to overly identify with the thinking mind and like mind being, I'm now pointing at my head, like mind being here.
Yeah.
When mind is actually everywhere in every cell of your body.
Yeah.
Everywhere. And when that, the whole cellular community becomes aware of itself, that's embodiment. But that's very, I described embodiment more practically before this. So that's very, that sounds very fancy when I say that, kind of scientific also, or mystical, like when all of the cells become aware of themselves, that's embodiment.
Yeah.
That's true also. Yeah.
Thanks. Yeah, thanks. I really relate to it because of the training that I did with you. And I think it was kind of surreal for me to go. So I also did the sort of more traditional lineage yoga teacher training, then came to your training. And it was something I'd heard about embodiment, but didn't really understand it. And then, to be honest, I'm still understanding it and moving through, you know, the knowledge of it. But it is just, I think my main takeaway from, or one of my main takeaways, there was lots from your training in Sri Lanka, was how disconnected I was from my body. And I didn't realize it until I did the training. And just to, like you were sort of saying, actually, I think there's a good way now, there's a lot more talk about, you know, having to sit with, you know, all the discomfort that comes in. Mm-hmm. And all the good and all the bad. And like you said, like not labeling everything necessarily, just allowing things to kind of just be there. And I also, having come back from your training, now teaching, it's quite hard to translate that sometimes, because I think it's hard to give that much experience in in a sort of quick paced in and out class setting, in a busy city. And I think, you know, and I've also been there and still am on some days. Some days I just want to kind of block out the shit that's happening and just move on.
Human.
Yeah, right. But
that's totally human.
Yeah.
And it's always like we get to that, like we wanna be good at embodiment, right? So you can really, and all of this, like what you're saying, also I recognize myself also still, you know, sometimes, but definitely in the beginning, like I don't get it, I don't understand it. This is very human.
Yeah,
we can't get it, we cannot understand it. It's more like we can only receive it.
Yeah,
when the direct experience of it rises, that's when we see it.
That, yeah,
that's when we, you know, receive it also. But it's not like it's on all the time,
right?
For
okay,
most of us, because that would mean that we would actually be awakened, you know, that we would be abiding in awakening, because that is what is actually arising. And then we would just be in that which is only arising, and not the past, not the future. Actually, they would just like collapse onto the now. You see, that's why we have these awakening experiences.
And yeah.
Risings and whatever you want to call it, you know, like it's all true. What you want to call it, right? It's still pointing at something that is your experience of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I would say that one main, like, universal or broad way of describing awakening would be that abiding in the direct experience of what is arising as life through you, right? I don't think we can all just take it. It's too beautiful. It's too much, you know. And I think that's why I'm sure there's a lot of other teachers also actually choose not to go with it
right.
too far. You know, like it's not like you're going too far. It's all here.
Mm-hmm.
But it's hard to speak about something that is seemingly higher or seemingly another state of being, kind of is, but it's like a more real state of being.
Yeah. It's bizarre, isn't it? It's hard to put
so
into
bizarre.
Words.
It's so bizarre. And it's also like, I remember one of my teachers said, I think it was Tara, or maybe it was Harish, not sure, but like that it's really hard to abide in that awakening when you have kids, for example, like, and it's
right.
not like kids are in the way of that, no, but it's like you want to be in that nitty-gritty humanness, you know,
yeah.
you want to lose them beyond everything, you don't want to lose them, like all these are human emotions, humanness is like so there, and it can be your dog, like your animals, like anything
yeah.
that your partner, like you need to really choose awakening also at some point.
Okay,
I'm not choosing it. Like I it's like, you know, I'm all about really kind of grounded, embodied awakening.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's exactly. Here, but in that awareness at the same time. So it's not just whoosh,
yeah.
It, or not just blow.
Exactly. I think yeah. when I experienced my awakening in Sri Lanka, it did feel like I had some sort of opening experience that connected me to something else. But at the same time, it took me a few days to like integrate, but it did still feel, you know, grounded in reality, or I certainly did feel that. But I think you've touched on a few really, really interesting things that, you know, I certainly felt like when I was in that kind of bubble and had, it just had that energy, that rising energy had just moved through my body, or whatever, however you explained it. Yeah. It was like, it was sort of, it's so difficult to explain. I'm even, you know, struggling to explain it now. But so I think one of my questions was like, you know, why does that happen? And I think you've sort of answered that, but like, do you believe then that there could be people that could stay in that awakened state, and what would they,
yeah,
why would that happen? Or would, I guess it's not, is that, it's not.
Okay,
even...
So there's a lot of, a lot of different prospects we can look at. Like, there might be a situation where it happens, quote unquote, too soon. The body's not ready. So mm-hmm. that's why the embodied, like the body's the place that grounds you and anchors you in that experience.
But right.
if you're, you know, here and it happens, you're going to go with it. So I truly believe that a lot of people that have been, other people think are crazy, are actually enlightened, are mm-hmm. awake. But it's not like the awakening is streaming through them. Does that make sense? Like there's nothing for it to stream through. So they are lost in it.
Mm.
You get that? Like,
yeah.
So that's why the body is so important, because that this is where it can happen here.
Mm-hmm.
Like in this reality, this world, this is where it comes from, like from, right?
Yeah.
So if we go with it, it's not here. We're not here. Not here.
And we have to exist, or we should hopefully want to choose to exist as
exactly.
a human being.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is truly. I believe that it's a choice for many of us. So like in the spiritual world, unfortunately, maybe the immaterial, the formlessness has been put on a pedestal to some
100%.
Extent.
Like, yeah.
Yeah. But it's not, that's not the end point at all.
No.
Like what you also described to me, and now it's like this something is rising, right? But also expanding, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, wow, you feel like all the kind of the what you are actually kind of disappears to some extent, because you touch that formlessness, that light, that expansive, subtle experience of aliveness.
Yeah.
Call it whatever, love. You know, it can be whatever, but just think of if that's where it would stay, like how would you be able to live your human life?
Yeah,
that's the thing. Like it needs to, and like I said, like everything has not just one direction. I truly believe there's the directionality also back, and that's also in Tantra, that there's not just one Kundalini, which is the word that you also use.
Mm-hmm.
That is described as kind of this awakening energy, right? That is breaking you open, or expanding you open, or whatever you want to, you know, say that it does as it moves through, right? There's also another one. This one, like, that comes down to meet it in a way, right? So there's one that is rising and expanding, but then there's one that is actually condensing and landing.
Mm, okay.
Right? And this is where it is met in the body. So hence, embodiment is so important with this work.
Yeah.
Spiritual work. It's so important. And it has become more and more talked about, which is great. And somatics more and more talked about, which is great. Nervous system more and more talked about, which is great, because that's going to blow your nervous system if something is like
absolutely
you're just going to be like see ya, right? But if you have that resilience and the kind of, you know, the window of tolerance for it,
yeah,
that means you're actually embodied and you're, you know, I don't want to say strong in the body, because that points to a lot of like triggering things in mind. But for me, let's just say that strong is like you're here, you know,
yeah.
you're very much here. Then you're strong in your body when you're very much in your body, right?
Yeah.
But not too much. That's this over identification with body. We all know what then happens.
Yeah.
It's like the look of the body, the control of the body. This is over identifying with the body. But mm-hmm. the here-ness of the body is really important.
Yeah. I've been reflecting on it a lot, actually, because when I was sort of in the experience, it was kind of happening and unfolding over a few days, where everything sort of appeared differently through my eyes, actually. I think I shared that with you in the training. It was like the world just looked different. But actually, at the time, I was kind of like, I really wanted to get back into my body, because my mind started to take over after the day or two or whatever. I just can't even remember. But it felt like I just really wanted to just land back in the body. And I actually wonder sometimes, I think subconsciously, because now we're talking about it, it's kind of coming out. It's like, oh shit, maybe I should have actually just like floated and stayed in that state, because it was so amazing. And just mm-hmm. another world. It felt like I was in another world. I mean, have you experienced that, where people do stay in that state for longer periods of time?
Yeah, I have also myself stayed for a longer period of time
mm-hmm.
in that state. We lovingly sometimes call it the soup, but that's more like what happens in the actual practice. Of course, mm-hmm. The experience is a bit different out of the practice, kind of, because you still gotta kind of do stuff, you know, but even doing it like kind of through a haze or something, like it's very weird to explain through words, because words are so far from the actual experience. But I don't think, like, if you ask me personally, and you are asking, no, you were asking if I know people. Yes, I know. No, but like, if we expand that into, is that what you should have done? I really don't know. But as far as I know through my body, that's not where I belong.
Mm.
Only. So when that started to happen to me, well, this longer period happened in 2015, right? So when that happened, that gave me maybe this intention and passion to really be that bridge between. We are the bridge between. So it's not just to be there or like here in that larger self. Like, we are part of this larger self. We all are aspect of this larger self, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I had that experience of that on YouTube, of that larger self, right?
Yeah.
It's through here that we serve, through this body. So how would that make any difference if we would just stay
float
there?
Around? Yeah.
How would that ever change the world? Let me ask you that. Like, how do we change this world? It's through this body. This is how we do stuff.
Mm.
And when that starts to happen, I'm sure it happened to you also. You make different choices.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
you, or even if you're kind of like through the habits and the nervous system response, you're almost doing a similar thing that you did before, but you kind of have that awareness to catch yourself. Like, wow, am I really doing this again or not? Like, it's very practical also. There's a side to awakening that is not so talked on. It's very practical.
Mm.
There's
a whole
lot
of
practical things, that just shifts in your world, tiny little things. Like, it's amazing. It is. And that's why I want to normalize it. I really want to be part of it. I'm not the only one, and I'm not, you know, I'm just me. but
it's very refreshing though, Satu, and I do thank you for just speaking to me about this, because it is a really difficult conversation to have, and I think it can feel a bit like out there maybe for some people and hard to grasp, but I think this is the whole thing about embodiment, right? You know, in my experiences with coming to your training was just like, it's so hard to explain until you've kind of experienced that for yourself.
Because there's really no words in that actual experience. So it's the experience that you have even before you have thoughts about it.
Mm-hmm.
So then it's really hard to go, you can go back to it, but it's really, like, if you try to grasp it when it's happening, then you're out of it.
Yeah.
You have to trust it. You have to surrender to it. And this all might sound to the listeners as like, whatever, mystical, blah, blah, blah. But and I totally get that too. I'm many times called, actually, the practical mystic, you know? And I love that, because that's what I really strive for, to bring these kind of mystical things into like practical doings, like, and being just the human being. And then, because I think what I remember when I was sharing about my awakening experience, and some people were like, no, like, you can't have, because it's like this, that wasn't it, because when it really happens, this is what happens. I'm like, how do you know? Like, how do, like, and again, how do you, why would you say that's the only experience that we can have when we awaken?
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe that. Like, there's just one thing to strive for, or one exploration that arises, one felt sense, or not even one, but like what is pointed at is like this grandiose, like, explosion or something like this. Yes, for sure, that can happen, but how grounded is that? How are we able to hold that?
100%.
Yeah.
I would love to hear from you maybe on some of those practicalities, because I think even for people that are listening and who, you know, maybe have moved through an awakening, because I know there's definitely people that probably are listening who have had some kind of awakening, and it might not be like exactly like you said, like a huge thing, but it could be very, you know, a thing that's happened, and then they feel like that has really shifted something for them. Or if they've had, you know, an experience of, you know, trying some sort of embodied practice, and maybe if they haven't, it's like an invitation to give it a try. But what are some of the ways that you found it has sort of become a practical aspect of your life?
Well, just let's bear in mind that this is me, and life flows through me very uniquely, like it does through you also. So I would say that one aspect that has really awakened are the kind of, what do you call them? Like these virtues, kind of main, what is this word? Oh, I want to say it's a kind of like a virtue, like compassion. Would you say that's a virtue? Like, what is it called? Oh my God, this is me. But I would definitely say that, like, compassion, empathy, or all of this has begun to be more of an abiding place for me. Of course, not all the time. Like, I have a tendency to be such an activist, and part of it is being a bit judgmental. Like, I own it. Like, when you see injustice, from the kind of lens of how you're looking into the world, it's very hard to be compassionate.
You know?
So that's something I struggle with a lot. But it has helped in that. So anything that is very heightened in you has kind of, in a good way, evened out. You see what I mean? Like, so also a very practical thing, I think, is that I don't have moods so much anymore.
Okay. Yeah,
I think that's great. Like, it's very, to me, it's very practical. It's like, okay, I can be in bad mood, but it shifts very quickly. Like, it's not like that it will continue
mm-hmm.
for a long period of time, or that I recognize that I'm in a mood, you know. Also, definitely one thing is that I see world more through kind of love and curiosity, instead of trying to fix stuff and trying to like do stuff about people and things,
yeah,
and change their minds. And you see what I mean? Like, it's more like, okay. And I suck at that also sometimes because of that activist side. Like, it's very hard for me to abide in that sometimes, but more.
Yeah.
I can.
Yeah, that's cool. And I feel like you are on social media as well. Like, you are an activist in the yoga world, and not even just on social media, but from what you're sharing, it is quite out there at the moment, I personally think, in terms of, you know, trainings and what you're doing. And I was actually speaking to a friend of, about you the other day and talking about it, and she was like, yeah, like, yoga is kind of activism. Like, there is so much activism that goes into yoga. And I was like, yeah, it's true. And actually, you're so real and authentic also on your channels on social media, which I really appreciate, because I think, I could get into a whole rant about it, but I feel like the platforms now just become, and I have to check myself as well sometimes, because I'm like, am I posting this because I care, or because it looks pretty and it looks nice and that's what people want to see?
That's the bad side of like the algorithms and everything. Like, you start to think that what you're posting is not actually like bringing people together and to hear you out, but that's not true. But we are like, we're trying to be fed with that. That's true. It's not like, I see it with bigger, like, I have a kind of a big account, but like bigger accounts that they have like similar amounts of likes and all of this, of course, like, and then you put two and two together, you're like, shit, it's the algorithm. So that's why I just stay really real and really, you know, sometimes I've had that too. Like, I never used to show myself practicing so much, or I made a thing out of like not showing myself in asanas, because it's not, those are just tools, they're not the goal and all of this. But it is a fact that people, you know, they want to see you, and that's okay, you know.
Yeah.
They want to see you move and practice and be like, oh, okay, you know, I can do that. Or be inspired also. But that's the thing, like, do you want to inspire people? Like, I can do a handstand. Do I want to inspire people to do handstands, or do I want to inspire them to be more with what is real and what is arising? And yes, if in practice what is real and what is arising is a handstand, then it might happen. But is that the goal, really? No, not for me. So I'm not going to show myself in a handstand.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
You know how I think? Like, I don't want that expectation either.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, and you also share quite a lot as well openly about being a mom and just like we were saying at the beginning, kind of like balancing real life with, I think, you know, what we were just talking about of like awakenings and trainings and out there concepts. And then you have this reality of, just being a mom and doing so much. And also you shared something recently, which was about moving out of motherhood and into, I think you call it cronehood, right? Am I saying that right? Can you explain a bit more about that, what that means?
Yeah, so that's more of the kind of the wise woman era. So I'm in the in-between. So my little things, perimenopausal things have started to happen. I'm 44.
Okay.
On Monday, I'm turning 44. So they usually start to happen in your 40s. And it's very weird time for me, and it will be for many women, because I'm not saying we're not supposed to, we're totally supposed to also have kids when we have kids. Like, but it's just very hard when you have almost a baby and you're at the same time being drawn into this direction of like more independence and more of like being that teacher and that like wise woman and that kind of more on a societal level, a change maker, a speaker, and all of this, and at the same time having the kids at home. Like, you know what I mean? Like, so this will, I think, for the modern woman, this is going to be huge. And this is more here than before, and this is not talked about
a lot.
So, like, we're getting kids older, and I don't see a problem with that at all. But then this really got me kind of by surprise that there is this, though. I'm not saying it's a problem. It's interesting.
Yeah.
There's this, like, wow, okay. And then I feel myself, like, having this grief over letting go of my body as a vehicle for life in that way, and as, you know, getting, you know, softer. And I go through these also, like I would say every woman, you know, when body shifts and changes, and that's also part of what society has unfortunately created. We all have been a part of creating it, for sure, but
yeah,
so it's an interesting time, and like letting go of something that is still here, and it's gonna forever be, because I will forever be a mom. But like, wow, it's very confusing, I have to say. But yeah. I have the waves. And then I have so many of my friends like just beginning the journey into motherhood, and I feel like I can give them so much right now.
And I was just thinking as well, like, we've talked a lot about society and the pressures and stuff, and I think that does have an effect on like how we are in the world, and how it's harder for us to just be with, you know, because actually when you're talking about like menopause and things as well, like I have a few older friends who have been sharing with me that they're struggling with that at the moment, and we don't talk about it enough as women. And I kind of forgot, in a sense, that actually, oh yeah, shit, that's going to happen to me as well. Like, but it's...
It's hard, because there's this like sadness in a sense of getting, like, how would I say this without sounding too sad? There's a part
sad.
That it's like, there is a part, unfortunately, that feels like you're getting a bit more invisible to other people. You see, that's so sad. Like, there's a felt sense of that I feel also. I'm not saying it's true, but it's real. Like, it's really real for me also. Like, wow, you know. And the way I experience it, like, of course, it's very individual, or individual to me, how I'm experiencing, and we will all experience it in different phases of our lives and different ways and all that. But like, this youth thing is so, for some reason, so important nowadays. It wasn't before. We know this. It wasn't before. If we look, it was more like the wiser women, the older women were looked up to, and for some reason got lost, and it kind of, I feel that too, you know, like getting older, and at the same time, like feeling really good when somebody says that I don't look 45 or 44, you know, and I can totally say that.
Yeah.
Why do I feel good about that?
Right. Yeah.
But it can also be because my partner is 10 years younger. Yeah, maybe that's also it. I've been thinking about that.
Yeah, it keeps you young.
Yeah, or also, like, I have to keep myself young. Like, there is this. I'm not, even though I've had awakening experiences and da-da-da-da-da, I'm not. It's also this, like, we need to really understand that that's not going to fix you.
Right.
You have to understand. That's actually going to mess you up. That's actually going to mess you up, because you actually really see what's real for you.
Yeah.
Also, your tendencies, your line of thoughts, everything becomes so real. And you're just like, what the fuck, sorry, is going on?
Yeah.
And why? I didn't want this. I thought it's going to be me, you know, out of suffering. Now I'm just suffering more.
And that's, yeah, that, but, and by the way, you can definitely swear, but like, that's, I guess also when you're talking about all of this, it is like, you know, even what we were talking about before we click record is like the stuff that is so hard to move through is like that is in a way like embodiment, right? It's just like being with that uncomfortable shift and just yeah, like society has told us, like you said, aging, with all that stuff, to just no, it doesn't happen. Get Botox, and you know, no offense to people who get Botox.
That's like messaging bypassing. That's spiritual bypassing. It is. It's like it's actually part of it. Like if we look at spirit as being a very important part of being here, it is. Like it's not like spirit and body, like body, mind. No, it's a whole being. Like it's a whole entity of all of this, right? So if we're so against aging, that's a lot. That's bypassing what's actually happening.
Totally. And like you were saying about the wise woman as well. And I just, it kind of like when you were saying that, it kind of upset me just deeply in a weird way. Because I was like, I think, or how I feel certainly now, especially on Instagram, actually, as I think we're seeing people that are transitioning out of like their 30s and 40s and they have a presence online older. And actually, like, you know, I'm in my 30s. I really look up to people who are in this space, in the spiritual space, in the spiritual community, because they have had the, you know, the lived experience and the knowledge and the wisdom to share that with other people. And, you know, I do hope and feel that that is also going to change, that we are going to be able to hold space and respect people who are older on social media, because, and hopefully they won't shy away because they have so much wisdom to share. And it's a shame if we only have like young people on in our lives that we see, and just it's the same old stuff then, isn't it? It's the same stories.
It is. And it's just, you know, we had this conversation with some of my friends that are over 40. Most of our age or older, they're on Facebook. They're not on Instagram. You know what I mean? Like we just we have to have people trained and showed how to use Instagram. Like it's also the matter that this is one point. Like and also when you get older, you just don't give a shit so much anymore.
Right.
Which is wrong, I think. Like it's wrong. Like we should get more visibility. Not we, like I'm transitioning. I'm not, you know. I have to point out, like, women that are, let's say, over 50, over 60, still vibrant, like Angela Farmer is still teaching, and she's over 80, and she's just like,
yeah, amazing,
in a, like, on an island in Greece, and doing her stuff, and then now doing online stuff, suddenly. She didn't even have a computer when I approached her 2 years ago, but now she has, you know, like, this needs to happen more. You're correct.
Yes, hell yeah. I love that. Right. It does need to happen. Yeah, I hope it does, because there's actually a lady I'm helping with. Hopefully she won't mind me sharing this. I'm helping her at the moment with a little bit of marketing, and she's fucking amazing. I'm like, girl, you need to get your message out there, because like more people need to hear your wisdom. And it's like,
so here's an opportunity for someone like you to really, like, we need help, or I don't. I'm pretty savvy.
You're good.
But there's a lot of really incredible teachers that are
absolutely
not online. And this is what I say in all my trainings. Like, you've heard me say that also. Like, usually the ones that, not always, but many times, that have a huge following on Instagram. Mm-hmm. That's what it is. It's just a following.
Just a following.
A community.
Yeah.
So usually the ones that have lesser, they have a true community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Followers.
Exactly.
Yeah.
No, I love that so much. Well, hopefully for some listeners, if they are a little bit older, they're listening, then maybe, and also for younger people, it's just like, just to, I don't know, maybe think twice about it in the future as well, when you're seeing people online, and just giving them a listen and being respectful as well to what they have to say. Satu, I feel like we could talk like for hours. Like, honestly.
Yeah, me too.
And I just love speaking to you on all of this stuff. And yeah, I honestly have so many more questions that I could actually ask you. But
do it again.
Yeah, maybe there's another opportunity. But I would just love to know, like, how can people find you? What are you up to now? Maybe for someone that hasn't experienced like an embodiment based practice, like, do you have any tips of how to get into that?
Well, there's a lot, like, good thing about this pandemic was that everybody's online. Well, not everybody, like we talk, but not in that way, but like everybody to a certain extent are online, right? So you can try a lot of things online. I would definitely recommend testing BMC, but that's like diving from a deep end.
Okay.
So maybe someone like you or somebody that like really kind of still mixes the more asana based, like I do also, not always, but when I have an open class, I mix more of that kind of asana based practice with somatic. So it's not too scary.
Exactly.
there's a lot of free movement, and that can be very scary because you don't feel so free. This is what has been also what's the consequence on going to classes where you're told what to do, unfortunately. So we need to rebuild that agency and give that empowerment so that people can find themselves again, basically.
Right. Yeah, that's what it comes down to, isn't it? Finding yourself. Yeah,
exactly. That's what you're doing. It's not like, it's not anything mystical in that sense. It's just you.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And you are, of course, a mystical being at the same time, but, you're here. So online is great, but of course, in person is the greatest and the safest way of exploring these practices. And as I said, anything can be an embodied experience or somatic experience. I teach, I don't want to say every Friday, but most Fridays that I can, if I'm not training or traveling, I teach online. So you can find those. Instagram is the best, and the links up on my Instagram, which you will probably post underneath this, so I don't need to.
I will.
What it is, and I have trainings, a lot of them, but I also have now two retreats coming, which might be.
Yeah, when are they?
Yeah, so one retreat will be in Bali, and one retreat will be in Portugal next year. So those are open to everyone, anyone, and totally like a week or so of getting to know yourself in a, I don't want to say safe environment, because we create the safety together. Like, I don't proclaim ever it without us all together kind of creating it and having that experience or not. Like, everything is, I heard this podcast that of this tantric teacher, and she was like, people ask me if my satsangs are safe, and I'm just like, what do you mean safe? Spirituality is not safe. Love that.
I can relate to that.
But yeah, safe in a manner of, yes, as a teacher, I would not offer anything that I can't take responsibility over. So in this way, yes.
Yeah, exactly.
We could work on that, you know, safety on that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I'm here in Portugal, and yeah, I travel, you know, I'm very bad at talking about myself in this.
No, that's fine. Thank you so much. And yeah, we'll share your website in the show notes, and like also your Authentic Glow Tribe, which
that's
got
my school.
That's your school, isn't it? Where, yeah, exactly. Where I'm doing your training now, I've gone back to do the 200 hours, and it's awesome. It's really cool. I'm enjoying the process.
It's a great training for you, because it goes kind of in the roots and into practical embodiment, also I call it. So it's more also very like nitty gritty stuff.
Yeah,
but still through this lens, you know. So
exactly.
Yeah, that's the 200, the kind of foundational.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you so much, Satu. I love chatting to you.
Great to see you.
You too.
Thank you for listening to the Magic and Mindfulness podcast, the podcast designed for the modern mystic and spiritually curious. This season, creative production is by Emily Lasbury, and co-production by George Lasbury. If you'd like to stay connected to what we're up to, make sure you follow us on Instagram at Magic and Mindfulness, and maybe share these episodes with a friend or give us a review or subscribe on your podcast platform of choice. This helps us to keep spreading the message and light work that we do. We appreciate every single one of you that tunes in. So stay well, stay safe, and see you soon.